Welcome to the latest edition of the RBC podcast, Veterinary Science on the Move. My name's Mark Cleesby, and today I'm going to be talking with Dr. Mandy Demestra about her interests in the equine placenta and pregnancy. Welcome, Mandy. So perhaps you could start off by telling us what it is that interests you about studying the placenta.
Well, we're really mainly interested in the placenta from the perspective of understanding pregnancy losses in the horse, which account for about 15-17% of all pregnancies in the mare are subsequently lost after they've been confirmed at day 15. And why some of these losses are diagnosed, such as with chromosomal abnormalities and infectious causes, many of them are thought to be related to the placenta not functioning normally or some sort of immunological response to the placenta. So our studies really try and aim to understand how the placenta is formed and develops, and also to try and understand how it interacts with the mother's immune system.
Okay, so for people who are not au fait with this area, can you guide us through the key processes in embryonic development and how the placenta forms?
Yes, so following the fertilisation of an oocyte by a spermatozoa, we have formation of an embryo, and there are really two main components to that embryo. There's what we call the inner cell mass, which goes on to form the fetus, and then there's an outer layer of cells called the trophectoderm, and this is a different lineage of cells, and these cells go on to form the placenta. And the placenta is really a transient organ of pregnancy, which helps provide nutrients and oxygen for the developing fetus. So it's a sort of like a support organ for the developing fetus.
So what sort of stage does the placenta actually form during development?
Well, there is some variation between species, but in the mare, the embryo reaches a developmental stage called the blastocyst. And this early blastocyst at around day 6 to 7 enters the uterus. And at this particular stage, you can see two distinct structures, what we refer to as the inner cell mass, which goes on to form the fetus, and an outer layer of cells called the trophectoderm. And it's this trophectoderm that gives rise to the placenta. And then over the next 30 days or so, there's actually a really rapid increase in the complexity of the placenta. So you go from this single layer of trophoblast cells, which are the specialised cells of the placenta, to a very complex organ comprised of many subpopulations of trophoblast cells that have different functions. For example, say the trophoblast cells that line the chorioallantoic part of the placenta, which have major functions in nutrient exchange, oxygen exchange, some endocrine functions. And then you've got the trophoblast cells of a structure called endometrial cups. And so these have primarily an endocrine and an immunological function.
Okay, so how does that work anatomically as regards the placenta and its connection with the mother, if you like?
Quite surprisingly, there's quite a lot of variation across different mammals in how the placenta forms and its anatomical features. But as we're mainly interested in the horse, I'll talk about the horse placenta. So the horse placenta is what we call an epithelial chorial placenta, so it's actually non-invasive. So what happens is the trophoblast cells of the placenta actually interdigitate and sit next to the mother's endometrial cells, which are the cells of the uterus, and they sit abutted to each other and crosstalk that way, which is quite different, for example, to how a human placenta forms, which is highly invasive. So the cells migrate quite deeply into the mother's sort of endometrium and are actually lining the blood vessels of the mother's endometrium.
Okay, and there are a number of other variations in different species as well, are there?
So yes, there's a third major type of placentation that really sits between the two extremes of human and horse we just discussed, and this is what's termed the endothelial chorial placenta, and this is most familiar species you recognise this in is the dog and the cat.
So does that sort of imply that the horse placenta is less well attached and perhaps abortion is more easy than in other species?
Well, certainly less well attached, and that's a feature that makes the horse placenta actually attractive to study, because the horse placenta, the horse conceptus as such, including the outer layer of placenta, continues to migrate up and down the horns of the uterus for a period of time following conception. And then it will stay fixed, and it sits next to the uterus but doesn't interdigitate in any way, so it can be very easily detached from this position. And even late in development, there isn't a very firm attachment.
Okay, so how is this process of placentation controlled?
Okay, so there are several factors that have been described. One is oxygen tension, so the amount of oxygen available can be one of the switch points. Also certain proteins that are expressed in the internal endometrium, and then also proteins that are expressed within the trophoblast cells themselves as they develop. So essentially there are like switch points in development where we start with a progenitor cell, which is part of the trophectoderm, and then different proteins, often transcription factors, which are expressed inside the nucleus and can act like master regulators, switching the cell from one stage of differentiation to another, are turned on, and this can lead to different lineages or different subtypes of trophoblast cells, which can perform different functions in the placenta.
So a series of different signals on the fetal side, and obviously presumably the maternal hormones will have an influence as well.
Yes, yeah, so on the maternal side it's both the hormones but also different growth factors that are expressed in the uterus, which is the closest surface to this developing placenta.
Okay, so where can this go wrong and end up with a loss of a fetus?
So one position where this can go wrong is when certain types of trophoblast cells don't go on to develop. And so this may be they don't divide, so they don't increase in number, so you get a very small placenta that's unable to perform its functions. Or it might be that these cells don't form a specialised trophoblast cell, such as one that secretes a hormone, such as equine chorionic gonadotropin, which is one of the hormones that cause pregnancy. And insufficient amounts of these hormones might lead to a lack of sort of maintenance of the pregnancy and pregnancy loss.
So talking about the horse placenta then, what are the unique features associated with this that you're quite primarily concerned with?
Okay, so the horse placenta has a unique structure called the chorionic girdle, and this starts to form around day 25 of pregnancy. This is a specialised group of trophoblast cells that start as a single layer of cells, and they rapidly proliferate, and then they receive a signal which causes them to differentiate or switch in their function, and they start to produce a hormone called equine chorionic gonadotropin, or ECG, that I just mentioned. And this is a band, visually it's quite interesting, it's sort of an annular band that's probably about half a centimetre in width at times, depending on the stage of development, that runs around the outside of the conceptus. And then what happens is this particular group of cells at around day 36 of pregnancy actually detach off from the main placenta and start entering into the maternal structures, the uterus, and they actually embed, they migrate down the endometrial glands and they embed into the uterus, where they will stay until about 120 days of pregnancy. And they play a very important role in maintaining pregnancy through the production of ECG and progesterone production required for it.
Okay, so these cells which are then invading into the mother's tissue, how do they do that without being attacked by the maternal immune system?
So this is one of the really interesting quandaries of placental biology and immunology in the horse, insofar as these cells that we're talking about that are coming from the placenta are expressing the antigens of both the mother and the father. And so essentially these father's antigens, as these cells invade into the uterus, which are called MHC class 1 molecules, should be seen by the mother's immune system and attacked. And they're not. So this is a very unique situation in pregnancy, that the mother's immune system is modulated in some way to accept these cells for a period of time.
Mm.
And this is really one of the key questions we're interested in addressing at the moment, is how is that a mother's immune system tweaked or changed, suppressed, you could think of, to allow these cells to be sustained in the uterus.
So this is really the area that you're working on primarily, but how do you actually study these mechanisms in practice?
Well, it can be quite challenging, but we're quite lucky in the horse because the structure I just mentioned, the chorionic girdle that sits around the outside of the conceptus, this is present before there is any invasion or any attachment of the placenta. So it's quite easy to actually obtain these cells completely non-invasively and go on and study them. And that we can do that in two ways. I was very lucky to work over in Professor Douglas Anzac's laboratory over at Cornell University, and he developed a technique of isolating these chorionic girdle cells and transplanting them into a non-pregnant mare in a site such as the vulva. And here we can actually study how these cells function and interact with the mother's immune system. And so this is one of the systems that I'm quite interested in continuing to use. This is a quick and non-invasive procedure where a small volume of trophoblast, so a strip about 1 inch by 4 millimetres, is actually injected into the vulva. And these grafts are very well tolerated, and there are really no observed adverse effects on the general health of the mares. The other way we study these cells is by taking them out before they invade and then mixing them with different immune cells and seeing how the two cells interact. In particular, we're interested in a type of white blood cell called the lymphocyte, and we're interested in a particular subset of those called a regulatory T cell, and how these trophoblast cells, these chorionic girdle cells, are able to modulate how the lymphocytes function.
So the idea would be that the invading cells presumably produce some factor which down-regulates the normal activity, perhaps via Tregs.
Yeah, so that's certainly the main line we're investigating at the moment, but there are probably several factors that and mechanisms by which these trophoblast cells can modulate the immune system. We know that it is a factor derived from the trophoblast cells themselves, so some sort of secreted protein. We haven't been able to specifically identify what that protein is at the moment, although that's a line of work that we have ongoing. But what we do know is this factor somehow is able to modulate either the proliferation of these immunosuppressive regulatory cells or attracts them to the site of the uterus where they can act sort of in an immunosuppressive function. It's also quite possible that these trophoblast cells can modulate the production of what are called cytokines. Cytokines are chemicals produced mainly by leukocytes, and these can either be pro-inflammatory or anti-inflammatory. So we propose that maybe the environment is more an anti-inflammatory cytokine environment during pregnancy as opposed to a pro-inflammatory, which would assist with the survival of the cells.
Going back to your transplantation method of studying these interactions, how does this work in practice? What's actually going to govern the survival of these transplants, and how long will they last?
In normal pregnancy, these particular cells have a survival time of about 40 to 80 days. So it's somewhat limited, and what we went and did is compared this lifespan to the lifespan of the cells in a non-pregnant animal to sort of take them out of that pregnant environment and see if they could still survive and have protective mechanisms. And what we observed is that when you transplanted these cells into the non-pregnant mare, they actually survived for an average of 75 days, so actually longer than what they do in pregnancy, in some cases up to 120 days. Mm-hmm. And this was without any general immunosuppression of the recipient mare. So we were really quite astounded by the length of time that these cells could survive without any manipulation whatsoever.
So nothing, no treatment of the mother in terms of hormones, or no, they would survive just in their grafted position?
Yeah, just in their grafted position. And of course there is hormones such as ECG produced by the grafts, mm-hmm. and so that may be contributing to their survival. But what we really took away from these experiments was that the fact that the cells could survive in a non-pregnant mare for the same time or slightly longer than pregnancy would suggest that these survival factors are inherent to the trophoblast cell themselves, the transplanted cell. So they were acting a bit like a master regulator of their fate and controlling the local environment. And whilst other factors, such as sort of factors in the endometrium and generally hormones of pregnancy, may contribute to that, these survival factors, it was in fact the trophoblast cell themselves that seemed to be the most important factor in this situation.
So that sounds like quite a powerful influence they're having then. So in which case, I guess the question is this something which is an interesting research tool in working out these mechanisms, or do you see this sort of mechanism or something resulting from it as having a therapeutic application, perhaps in mares that are prone to lose their foals?
So we're certainly starting to explore that line of research at the moment, but one therapeutic application that is already evident is the potential use of these cells in mares that show behavioural changes around estrus. So as you may be aware, a significant portion of mare will show overt signs of estrus, and these can be detected with behavioural changes like holding up their tail, urinating, particularly in the presence of a stallion. And you can imagine these sorts of signs that last for 5 to 7 days can be quite disruptive if they're a riding horse, so a lot of people want to suppress these signs. And what we found is that the high levels of ECG that were produced by these transplanted cells induced significant amounts of endogenous progesterone. And then this endogenous progesterone was able to suppress these signs of estrus. So this is something we feel might be able to become a future treatment where you could give the mares a one-off injection of these cells, and that might last for, say, 3 months or so. The other avenue, although this is a long way down the track but still plausible, is that these cells could be used as a delivery type mechanism, as a cell therapy, where you could actually transplant the cells that have been what we call transduced with another protein, and they would be like a cell factory, so you'd be able to put them in once and then continue to produce this particular protein that you want to deliver. But that's obviously a long way down the track.
Is it something that is only having a local effect, or, for example, if you had a pregnant mare that you were perhaps worried about, I mean, is this potential source of additional substances which may help retain the pregnancy?
We would like to set up experiments now to investigate that, but that's certainly plausible that these transplants could be administered to mares that have had recurrent pregnancy losses, and the idea that it might be able to promote an increase in progesterone production and other immuno sort of modulatory factors secreted by the cells might be able to influence how the mare's immune system is responding to that particular pregnancy.
Okay, well, what about the human story? Do these studies give us any insight or perhaps suggest some further avenues of research or therapies for human pregnancies?
In human pregnancy, really understanding the key mechanisms involved in how the immune system is modulated is still one of the key questions. What significance might these studies have for human pregnancies? Well, while there are differences between humans and horses, there are also quite a few similarities. First of all, if we think of the horse, it's actually not bred for any fertility parameters. And so often we have older mares being bred, and we seem to see very similar levels of pregnancy losses, say, in the horse, as you do see in human pregnancy. And more recently, with the recent sequencing of the horse genome, we've also been able to understand at a molecular level how the horse and the human placentas are similar. And our recent work showed that a transcription factor protein called glial cell missing 1s was very similarly expressed between cells in the human and the horse placenta. And these same cells also produce the hormone human chorionic gonadotropin HCG and ECG. So there are similarities there. There are also differences, as I mentioned earlier, because the human placenta is invasive. But in this particular cell type, which produces HCG or ECG, we think the horse might be quite revealing in trying to understand how these cells differentiate and function and how they're able to defend off immune destruction. Our studies of lymphocyte function in particular in the horse, which the horse has a particularly strong lymphocyte response during pregnancy, is a nice sort of model system in a way for us to try and dissect out how trophoblasts interact with lymphocytes that may have certainly have some implications for understanding human pregnancy. And whilst there are certainly going to be differences across species, there are also lots of similarities. So we would certainly hope that this work would be able to inform the understanding of immune responses and placental development in human pregnancy as well.
Okay, well, this sounds like a very interesting avenue of research, and I'll look forward to hearing about the ongoing story. And thank you very much for joining us today, Mandy.
And thanks very much to all our listeners out there. As ever, if you have any comments or suggestions on the podcast, please feel free to email us on podcast@rbc.ac.uk. And I hope very much that you'll be able to join us again next time. Thanks very much.